Because we live in a Puritan police state, we are obliged to inform you that we may sometimes use explicit language. Now that you've been informed, things are about to get weird.
Welcome to what I had heard was, the following contest is scheduled for one fall with a 30-minute time limit and is a triple threat match. Across from me is our four-time reigning champion, the original Seeds Medallion. And coming to the ring is the challenger, our self-proclaimed expert and legendary sultan of shit-talking, Nick Feeds Medallion Goaler!
Get ready for a fistful of pain.
And I'm Anna. And today, we're talking about wrestling.
Shouldn't have that been obvious from the intro?
I hope so.
Let's get it on.
But if not, that's what we're, just to clarify, that's what we're doing today. So Nick, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast today, and we are super excited to have the full medallion team together.
Yay!
That's what you call a national treasure.
Oh, we laugh like men.
So this is just going to be an hour of us making various noises like we do when we're all together.
Probably.
You about that.
I hope you guys find it as enjoyable as we do. So, Nick, you want to give a little insight as to why you are our self-proclaimed expert?
Beyond the fact that I'm awesome, I've been watching wrestling since I was a little baby boy. It's going back like 30 years now. So,
God, why are you trying to make me feel old?
I was just as shocked when I realized that. It's like a mixture of like impression and like I was like, oh, I'm impressed with myself, and like almost a tinge of sadness to know that I had such a glossary and index. I'm like a wrestling Wikipedia.
I feel like you could make some money with that.
I probably could.
Well, I mean, I do remember when you were younger how you would write fan fiction.
Oh, yeah. I had whole characters built out.
Nice.
Write up scenarios and whatnot. Yeah, no, I was fully into, I fully supported you with your wrestling love and endeavors. I remember, you know, we went to a couple matches with Dad at the Cincinnati Gardens.
R.I.P. Cincinnati Gardens. I'll miss you forever.
Rest in peace.
I think it's like a parking lot now.
Yeah, it's super sad. But yeah, no, we used to go matches. We'd watch that stuff weekly. You would watch it nightly.
I would do puzzles and build Legos to listening to Rowdy Roddy Piper and Jesse the Body Ventura just going in on different wrestlers. And I actually went to Halloween for the last 2 years as Nick Flair. So...
Woo!
What is it that draws you to wrestling?
A little bit of the identification of different characters. Like, you kind of get to not necessarily escape reality, but you kind of suspend your belief for a minute. I mean, you know, you think about the fact that, you know, these are athletes. These are people that are that have trained and forged their bodies, if you will, to come out and tell a story, and they dedicate their lives to that. And then, you know, they build identities and personas for the people. It's a really nice way to kind of just take yourself out of all of the craziness that may happen in the real world for a second. And just kind of invest in something that, you know, you can really appreciate in a finer form and know that at the end of the day that most of the time the competitors are going to be all right.
One thing I'm finding through all of our episodes is that everybody uses it to escape a little bit. It gives their mind a break
Well, I think that's what, I mean, when people look at, when you look at hobbies or you look at even music, you know, because if I'm not watching wrestling, I'm normally DJing, but all of that is to essentially, you go through life already tackling all these different things. You just need a moment to kind of breathe and be able to just appreciate something. And, you know, that's why when you say you're escaping, what you're really doing is you're finding comfort in something that you can kind of have a control over, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I really enjoy about wrestling. And nothing is ever the exact same. You can watch the same match over and over again, and you might notice little nuances that you didn't before. But you see two wrestlers, you know, compete on Monday night and they compete on Friday night. The matches are different. Even if they're building things in the same way, everything, every time is a little bit different. I really enjoy that.
Sure, that's where the art comes from, you know, because, I mean, yep. it's like a physical soap opera, you know. You have these storylines and you have these relationships that are built and you know, whether it's a brotherly kind of love or like an actual, you know, intimate relationship between people, etc., you know, alliances are forged and broken and hearts are broken and it's fantastic, the storylines and the intricacies and, you know, how this stuff weaves in and out with each other. But then, so you get that, you get the storyline, you get this an emotional investment into these people, these characters, personas that they're built, but then you also get the physical nature of it, right? So so if you don't like that other character, you can actually cheer for somebody to smash them with a table, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and so you get this, you're able to get this physical aggression out along with all these emotional feelings, and the nice thing is they break it down into a simpler form of that's the bad guy, that's the good guy, at least for this match,
right?
You know,
yeah.
And when one person wins and another person loses, you're feeling validated with your feelings, and it's a great release because life isn't like that,
and you're not going to get hurt,
right?
Watching,
and, well. Sometimes shit flies into the audience, but...
I meant at home from your TV, but...
Well, yeah. Yeah, and as long as you don't get so upset, you know, you like, kick the coffee table and break a toe or something, but...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are times where you lose your mind a little bit. Well, I remember one time I fell down the steps because I got so excited that... I think it was Mick Foley won the title, and I missed a step because I ran up and down the steps and just cascaded... down a litany of steps.
Sure.
And I mean you just kind of you take yourself out and you invest yourself in that. It's really nice.
Oh, totally. I mean, yeah, your emotional investment into it. It's, you know, it's the same as like, oh, my team won the Super Bowl, or, you know, oh yay, my favorite show just won a Tony. You know, some people get so into that kind of stuff that, you know, you go sliding down the stairs out of excitement.
In a fit of joy.
What are your... So, okay, who are your favorite wrestlers just from the beginning? Like, who would you be your favorite?
Oh, man. So, I mean, when you think back to that much time, and I mean, you know, I was born in the mid-80s, but some of my favorites started even before then. But, I mean, you think about some of the names, you think about... people like Ric Flair and Randy Savage.
Legendary, yeah.
Yeah. My favorites always have been and always will be the Hart family, though. So Owen and Bret Hart were huge to me. Kevin Nash, when he was in WWE, he went by Diesel. And he when he left, he went by his real name, Razor Ramon or Scott Hall, as he's known now. I actually named cats after them.
Diesel and Razor. Yep.
Yep. But, you know, even now, I mean, I think that's really the coolest thing about professional wrestling is that the performers grow and evolve and change. So, you know, as you go through different eras, as you go through different decades, you know, there's there's so many different, you know, performers. So like Edge, he's been performing since the 90s, and he just came back at the beginning of, at the end of last year, or at the beginning of this year, in the Royal Rumble. And he was gone for like 5 years. He was out with neck surgery, and basically he was told he could never wrestle again. And that kind of comeback story. So it's just, you know, I'm a big fan of people like that who have that. You can just feel their passion for the craft. You know, the one nobody ever really talks about, but I was a huge Chris Benoit fan.
Oh, man. Yeah, I forgot about him.
Yeah. What happened with him and his family was a tragedy. And
do you want to, for the folks who don't know, you want to give a little backstory?
Yeah. So Chris Benoit he performed over in Japan and here in the States on WCW and WWE. That was his name, the Crippler Chris Benoit. Storied career, probably one of the most proficient technical wrestlers of all time. I mean, you know, he's not discussed anymore, but when you look at his actual, you know, resume and his acumen, he would have probably been one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And I believe it was like 10 years ago or so, he was found dead in his home, and they came to find out that he had taken the lives of his wife and his child before taking his own life. And what started as a tragedy became probably one of the darkest marks ever on professional wrestling. So it's always something that's difficult to talk about, but I think it also demonstrates the hardships that wrestlers also go through.
Well, because they were doing studies, and basically due to, and this is, there's a lot more studies about this in NFL, but basically due to concussions, you know, boxers, football players, wrestlers, due to consistent head trauma, it causes anger issues, for lack of a better word.
Right. There's damage.
Yep.
Yeah. And so because of this brain damage, it basically there's rage and anger and control issues that develop. That's one of the main contributing factors to what happened with Chris and his family.
Yeah. So they actually did a not necessarily a documentary, but Vice has a TV show called Dark Side of the Ring, or The Dark Side of Wrestling, I think it's called.
Uh-huh.
And they had a whole episode on Chris Benoit. And so after everything happened, they were able to, you know, actually remove and look at his brain. And they determined that at the time of his death, he had essentially the capacity in the brain of an 85-year-old man. And he was in his like 40s.
Wow. Jeez.
And yeah. So it was ever since that, there's been a huger emphasis on safety and precautions being taken in the ring.
Sure.
A lot of that has to do with a wrestler who suffered a couple concussions. His name is Chris Nowitzki. He was a Harvard graduate, joined WWE, had a couple head injuries, and proceeded to realize that, you know, these are lasting. These have lasting impacts.
Yeah.
So
totally.
Yeah, you couple 20 plus years on the road with multiple headshots from chairs and bumps and you know, jumping off the top rope and all these other things atop. You know, the lifestyle that you have to live and lead, multiple things really contributed to it. And, you know, I think that it was probably, like I said, it's probably one of the darkest marks on wrestling. But through that, the safety and the precautions that are taken to make sure that wrestlers are not only safe, but are mentally aware and have the mental capacities to continue. All of that has changed since then. So,
which is great.
Some good, some good has come out of that dark mark.
Yeah, it's sad that, you know, things have to get pushed so far, like limits have to get pushed so far to ensure safety standards, right. You know, yeah. I mean, and sadly that's across the board, you know, yep. in any industry, it's mm-hmm. like something tragic has to happen for everybody to go, oh wait, that was a bad idea.
Yep.
So what do you say to all the folks who say that wrestling's fake?
Well, I mean, when you look at the Benoit situation, but you know, I think the word's fake, and it's always been a stigma with wrestling, is that they say wrestling's fake. You know, it's not real, right? Well, the argument is, well, you take a chair shot and tell me how fake it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I think it goes even deeper than that, though. I mean, you think about these are men and women who, you know, they go train and they spend hours upon hours building and shaping not only their bodies but their mental game to essentially walk out and perform in front of whether it's 10 people or 10,000 or 10 million, you know, whatever it is, people are watching them on, you know, sometimes a weekly basis. And you can't fake that, you know. When you fall off a top rope, it's gonna hurt.
Oh, sure.
You know, you can protect yourself. I mean, when you watch an action movie, you know that there's probably a stuntman involved, you know.
Right, and they're still taking the fall. They're still doing the same things. It's like wrestling is scripted.
Exactly.
Right. Their skill, their agility, the falls they take, all that stuff is real. The outcome of the matches, the storylines, all that stuff is scripted. So I think that when folks say wrestling's fake, it's like it's scripted as compared to, say, a football game, which is like, you know, people have, you know, the outcome has yet to be certain.
Wouldn't a compromise be to call wrestling a performance? Because that doesn't minimize what it is. And it's not fake. It is a performance.
Yeah. So
totally.
One of the things that I've kind of explained to people is they're performance athletes. Because you think about there's different walks of life that go into the professional wrestling business. I mean, there's a guy right now, his name's Ricochet in WWE. He is basically a gymnast, and you look at what he does in the ring, he's different than what Kurt Angle was, and Kurt Angle came from an amateur wrestling background. You have ex-professional NFL players. You have people that, you know, dedicated their life. Because somebody like myself, I actually looked at going to become a professional wrestler, you know,
which I was fully behind. I told Mom, yeah. Mom was like, I don't, Nick wants to do this. And I was like, no, let him do it. One, it's his passion. He's excited about it. He knows everything about the business. There's so many different ways to be involved. I was like, yes, do it. Let him, whatever he needs, yes. And there was a little selfish part of me because I wanted to be like, check it out, my brother's a wrestler. But, because that would have been awesome. But, yeah, that was your thing. Like, go for it. I was all in.
And for me, you know, it was all about that same thing. Like you, there was a speech by Triple H on the first Tough Enough series. So Tough Enough was a series where they followed around a group of people, and it was kind of like a Survivor style show where they get voted off week after week.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, they go through the process of learning to become a professional wrestler to try and earn a contract with the WWE. And he basically said, you're looking at the glitz and the glamour, and you're looking at all the lights and the fans screaming your name, but you're not looking at the fact that, you know, there's going to be times where you're going to wake up and you're going to feel like you got hit by a truck. There's going to be times where you're driving 6-7 hours to the next show right after you get out of the ring. You know, it's a hard lifestyle, and you know, I don't necessarily regret not going after it, but you know, it was always one of those things that I've always been passionate about, and I guess that's why I've stuck with it, is because of the fact that even though I never ended up, you know, going into the business, just the dedication and passion that it takes to really find your success in it is, it's at another level. You can't just wake up and go, I'm going to go wrestle. You have to really dedicate yourself to the idea of that. So.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I really enjoy theater and movies and television and all this stuff, but I never wanted to be an actor. You know, I didn't want to be the guy in front of the screen. So I figured out how to still be a part of that, but be adjacent.
Yeah.
You know? Get adjacent, yeah. Actor adjacent.
Exactly. Yeah. Secondhand cool. That's the...
Exactly. And that's an interesting part too, is like, you know, I feel like I'm one of the, I feel like I'm kind of like a, not necessarily a different kind of wrestling fan, but you know, people, when they first see me, they're like, wait, hold on, you like wrestling? And I'm like, I absolutely love wrestling.
Hell yeah.
Like, it's one of the biggest things, you know, about my life. My, my girlfriend, she'll pick on me, and she says how exhausted she is from watching Monday Night Raw and WWE NXT and AEW and SmackDown and all the pay-per-views. And, you know, but even now, as she's spent more and more time, she watches it and she gets just as involved.
Oh, sure. You know? Well, and that's the cool thing about wrestling is that, because it, you know, it used to be... The stigma for wrestling was that, you know, it's a whole bunch of rednecks and hillbillies and they're all shouting USA and it's all, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's just a bunch of guys beating each other up in a ring, right?
Yeah.
In their underpants.
In their underpants. Thank you. Yes. No, it's not. There's no homoerotic undertones at all whatsoever. It's all super manly. And, you know, but the fantastic thing is that wrestling has evolved through the years, much like... Our society has evolved and changed through the years, and it's awesome because you have all these different characters. Like, there's somebody for everybody, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a persona. Like, there's, you know, there's goth, there's hippies, there's, you know, like any quote unquote stereotype that you associate with is there for you, you know. Who are the three brothers? Well, they're not actual brothers. Who are the three team members? Who are like super positive, and like they got their own toys and stuff now. Well, everybody's got their own toys.
Oh, the New Day.
Yes, the New Day. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, they're fantastic. They just promote all this positivity, and you know, they're
Bootios. We make sure you're not booty.
Exactly, Bootios.
We found those.
Yes, I purchased those for our friend Dayton for Christmas 1 year.
Yeah, yep. I think that was last year.
Yeah. Exactly.
I never had it, but I heard it. I actually heard that they weren't bad.
Well, we just found the toys. I didn't find the actual Bootios.
They had a cereal too. So what they would do is like they'd come to the ring, and they'd have their Bootio cereal, and they'd pour it on everybody. Yes. Bootios. They make sure you're not booty. But I think that's the coolest thing is like when you go through what professional wrestling is, and not only is it just WWE anymore. I mean, you have different, you have AEW, which is All Elite Wrestling. You have different independent circuits. You have Japanese wrestling. You have Lucha Libre in Mexico. You have European styles. And that's the other cool part about wrestling is hey, you may not find the style of American wrestling to be something that you're into, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't dive into Japanese strong style or, you know, European catch-as-catch-can wrestling. There's something for everyone if you are willing to take yourself out of that box of, oh, it's fake or, oh, it's stupid or whatever it is, to really look at what they're trying to do, which is every match, every storyline is to build and invoke emotion in you. And
they do that, man.
They do. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's just like Raw, Monday Night Raw is the longest running weekly episodic television show of all time. It's been on the air for over 30 years now. And that speaks to, you know, the longevity and the ability to connect with, you know, people is just being able to present that many different types of personalities over 30 years. And even beyond that.
People, and I haven't watched videos like this in a long time, but they'll get in their backyard and jump off of roofs onto tables and hit each other.
Like backyard wrestling?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know what's funny is there's always been a stigma about backyard wrestling that it's dangerous. And I mean, in a lot of ways it is.
Well, anytime you have somebody who is untrained,
yes,
trying anything, you're going to hurt yourself. Because that's the thing. Like, it much like with stuntmen and wrestlers, like, there are ways to fall. There are ways mm-hmm. to jump. There are ways to carry your body. And you stretch ahead of time and you work certain muscles. So then that way you can do these things without causing yourself more harm.
Right. If you jump off the roof, though, it's not a boo-boo. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Crackety crack or...
Yeah, I mean,
don't come back.
That's where you have to trust your partner. I mean, and that's another thing about wrestling is you think about it and you go, oh, this person's pulling a punch. No, what this person is doing is they're giving their body to another person to tell a story. So, you know, when they are jumping off the roof, it's not just I'm jumping 20 feet onto you. It's you have to make sure that you are positioned and anticipating that. And not only that, but you're kind of catching my fall, you know? So there's been a lot of actual backyard wrestlers that have found success, you know, as they get older. So, I mean, probably the biggest examples of that are Jeff and Matt Hardy and Hurricane Helms, Shannon Moore. Basically, they created their own backyard wrestling in North Carolina, and they all continued to chase that passion to the point that, you know, Jeff has been a world champion in WWE. He's been a world champion in TNA. Matt Hardy has built successful gimmicks. Hurricane Helms has built an entire career on it. I mean, you know, do I think that reckless backyard wrestling is probably one of the marks that makes people sour? But when you think about it, in most of those instances, it's kids being kids, right? I mean, you know, here they are coming together to enjoy something and pursue a passion. And we talk about how dangerous the world is now. You know, we talk about human trafficking. We talk about, you know, all the potential bad things that are out there in the world. I would much rather know that I have my son in the backyard wrestling ring than out doing God knows what, God knows where, and having access to a litany of different situations that may be just as dangerous, if not more. So, you know, backyard wrestling has its place. I think that as long as that transitions to A, making sure you're safe, and B, you know, continuing to pursue the longevity of that and find the next step, hey, by all means, you know, have fun with it.
Sure. So what do you think the next step in wrestling is? You know, because, I mean, we've got, you know, there's women wrestling, there's people boxing, wrestling kangaroos, mm-hmm. you know, there's...
Why don't you take that up, Nick?
There's, yeah, you want to wrestle a kangaroo?
Look, if a kangaroo wants to get super kicked, they, by all means, they can catch it.
So we have an email address if there's any kangaroos that want to battle Nick.
Well, you know that the Cincinnati Zoo right now allows you to go pet them. Maybe one's going to get a stone cold sun. Please don't.
Yeah, please don't go trying
Cincinnati
to.
Zoo.
Yeah.
So steal a kangaroo.
Don't steal kangaroos from the Cincinnati Zoo. Don't try to stone cold stunner them. Like, that's not...
Really, don't steal kangaroos from anywhere.
Personally, I think it's a bad idea to have people wandering around with a whole bunch of kangaroos, because those things are strong. Like,
they're pretty mean
they
from
really
what
are.
I've seen.
Yeah, they'll knock you out if they need to. You know, I mean, it's just
they've
like...
They've got hands.
Yeah.
But I when it comes to the future, you brought up women's wrestling. So over the last few years especially... there's been a lot more emphasis on, you know, the seriousness of women's professional wrestling. I mean, it started way back when you had you know, GLOW, which is the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and it was a legitimate all women's promotion.
I used to stay up past my bedtime to watch it on my little black and white television.
Yeah, and I mean, it was like that was inspirational. I mean, you really think about it, especially even back then, you know, I love the revolution of women in equality, especially in performance arts and things such as this. It's no longer, oh, she's a pretty face. It's, you know, she can go out there and perform.
It's the transition from being the ring girl, you know, the person who just walks around the ring with a placard, to the person who's actually out there kicking ass. I got mad respect for the Fabulous Moolah. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, Fabulous Moolah was great. Wendy Richter, mm-hmm. Alundra Blaze, or she went by Medusa.
Yep.
But there's this new one. So Ric Flair's daughter, Charlotte Flair, followed in her father's footsteps. She's really helped usher in this new women's era. Sasha Banks, Bayley, Carmella. But there's one woman above all else that I have like immense respect for, and her name is Becky Lynch. She's in the WWE right now. She's out on maternity leave. But prior to that, she had almost a 2-year run recently where her nickname was The Man. And she created that persona herself. She essentially said she got tired of the glass ceiling that she was facing. And she basically said, I'm not going to take it anymore. And created this persona of, I'm not just here for women's wrestling. I'm a wrestler, period. And I'm not going to be afraid of anyone. I'm not going to back down from anyone. You know, when you think of The Man, it's supposed to be, I'm the person, you know, like I'm that one person. And she said, that's who I am. I'm the man. So it's not about gender. It's about position. And she basically said that she's not going to back down from anything. And I think with that, I think the future is going to continue to be in women's professional wrestling, helping continue to evolve and develop into longer matches, into more serious matches, into more main events. The first women's main event at a WrestleMania was headlined not last year, but the year prior with Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey, and Charlotte Flair. I think that's where we're going. But I also think that one of the more unspoken ones is in how it handles the LGBTQ community.
Yes.
So for a really long time, there wasn't a strong voice and a strong footing. So it was kind of like a football locker room where even if you are, you don't talk about it. And now there's more and more characters that are starting to come out and starting to open those doors. One of the first openly gay professional wrestlers from, his name was Darren Young in the WWE. Then you had Orlando Jordan, who was openly bisexual. But recently, there's a wrestler in AEW. His name is Sonny Kiss, S-O-N-N-Y, Sonny Kiss. And, you know, he's an openly gay wrestler. And, I mean, his character is really amped up, but it's done. And it's not, they don't place him as a comedic wrestler. They place him as a wrestler. And I think that as we continue to evolve, as people and as the sport or the performance evolves, you're going to see a lot more of that inclusion and community as well. And it's not going to be based just in, you know, what kind of sexual orientation you have, but just, hey, this person, whether they're, you know, whoever they may be, they're a wrestler. And there's another wrestler in AEW. Her name is Nyla Rose. And she is the first, she completed her transition from male to female and wrestles in the women's division in AEW exclusively. I think that as the sport continues to grow and evolve, it's going to be more commonplace that those things are not seen as negatives or, you know, criticized or beaten down. I think that it's going to become more commonplace and accepted.
So it gives a home to people who may not find acceptance in other places.
Absolutely. You know, one of the hardest parts about the wrestling community is like you said earlier, you know, there's a stigma that it's a whole bunch of woohoo wrestling, you know what I mean? And, or it's a whole bunch of, you know, guys that live in their mom's basement and just type away. And I think that as the sport has evolved, there's less acceptance of that kind of chauvinistic, misogynistic, and closed-minded behavior. It's still there. When you go to the message boards, you're going to hear people make jokes and do all that stuff. But,
well, sure. You know, I mean, but that's the thing. It's like, that stuff's still there because that's still part of our country. Like, that's the thing. Like, there's still rednecks, you know, and that's not a bad thing. You know, there's still people who, you know, are God, America, and country, and that's not a bad thing. Like, we can all come together, we can all do this stuff, we can all be in the same ring, we could all sit next to each other and still love the sport, you know. It's just the nuance of, you know, you can still be who you are just as long as you're not hurting anybody else.
Exactly. And I think that's where it's going. Is more acceptance and less acceptance of intolerance. Obviously, wrestling is rooted in a good guy and a bad guy, but no longer is it about, you know, you're from this country, I'm not supposed to like you. Or you're, you know, you do this, I don't like you. It's rooted in what is your moral compass really? You know, what do you stand for? What are you going after?
Right.
You know, are you rooted in positive intention or negative intention? And
yes, that's the key right there. Right. Your intention.
Yeah. And so you're seeing a lot of that subtly become more of the norm. I think all of that is where professional wrestling is really going to continue to evolve. Is I like to say wrestling fans, as everything else goes, so goes professional wrestling. Because everything is just amplified. That's really what it is. Is when you look at Stone Cold, or you look at The Rock, or you look at anyone, or John Cena, what they all tell you is, I'm generally this person. I've just amplified it 100 to 200 times. You know, I'm just put a spotlight on this and just ramped it up. So, if that's the case, you'd have to assume then that, you know, the core group is going to be the same way. It's just amplified from what the general voice is. So, you know, as there are more voices that are brought into the equation, so will bring better forward thinking. And I think that's where wrestling's going right now.
Do you have a lot of weird theater stuff that needs a new home, and you prefer it doesn't just go into the dumpster? Reset likes the weird stuff. With ResetYourSet.com, you can find listings to buy, sell, and rent items that folks in the industry will truly appreciate. Go find them on Instagram, Facebook, at ResetYourSet, and check out the site that offers so much more. ResetYourSet.com.
So, where did you find criticism of your passion?
So, I think the biggest was, I'm one of those people that I don't care, but, you know, when people see that you have a wrestling shirt on, or they see that you're watching wrestling, if they're not a fan, they don't understand, the first thing you hear is, oh, you watch that stuff? You know, and you hear that on a regular basis, you know? So that's where I've faced it the most is, you know, just the general stigma of being a wrestling fan is, oh, you watch wrestling. And for me, I always look at that more so, though, as an opportunity to inform and really kind of just it took a while to really take pride in it. But now I just take pride in the fact that, you know, yeah, I'm a wrestling fan. I'll tell, like, in all of my bios when I'm at work or anything like that, I include that I'm a huge wrestling fan.
Well, to be completely honest, I had no interest in wrestling, but everything you were talking about makes it sound much more interesting, far more appealing, so...
when you look at wrestling on the surface, right? If you were to tune into to WWE on Monday night, you're gonna watch it and go, well, this is cheesy and dumb. And the honest answer is yeah, right now there's different storylines and different things that you may not identify with. If you have 3 hours of content and they're all telling different storylines, not every story is going to be the same thing. I mean, when you think about Saturday Night Live, not every skit that they've put out has been good, you know?
Right. That is a true statement.
But yeah, but then you get those Will Ferrells, you get the Chris Farleys, you get the Adam Sandlers. Those are gems of those people who you identify with and the things that they put together where you go, I might not like all the SNL skits, but I love that, you know? It's the same thing with wrestling. You have to find somebody who cares about what you care about and then shows you those things.
Back in college, when I was doing theater stuff, I wrote a paper about how professional wrestling is very similar to the Commedia dell'arte of Italianate Renaissance theater.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you have these different types of characters. You have, you know, the rich person, you have the young ingenue, you have the hero young guy, you have the old miser, you have these like different characters. And through comedy and tragedy, you know, comedy teaches you how to not do something, where tragedy mm-hmm. teaches you how to do something.
Right.
You know, and so depending on how the main character deals with that scenario, if you're like, hey, I want to be like this person, then you should emulate their actions. But if you're right. like, I don't want to be like this person, you know. Or ha ha ha, we'll make fun of them because they're doing these things and I'm laughing at them for doing these stupid things. Oh, hey, maybe I shouldn't do those stupid things. And that's how you learn. And just how closely all this stuff is tied and how you were saying before, you know, as being a performing art, mm-hmm. it's a reflection of society and how things have changed and evolved over the years. And like you said, the characters, the personalities are reflecting the people in the audience.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that when you bring up comedy and tragedy, I think that's the biggest thing about professional wrestling that gets misunderstood. When you look at any character, some of the deepest characters that have come about from pro wrestling are rooted in their ability to pull both. So a lot of people look at Stone Cold Steve Austin and they remember, you know, this Texas tough guy who, you know, walks in the ring and drinks a whole bunch of beers and beats up his boss, you know, because
who hasn't wanted to do that? You know?
Exactly.
I want to roll up on a motorcycle with a black vest and, you know, shotgun some beers and punch my boss in the face.
Right. And, you know, the thing, though, that made Austin so relatable, though, is people forget about the fact that he could tie into not taking himself as serious. He did a lot of comedic skits.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at The Rock, the reason that The Rock ended up really resonating and becoming as big as he was is because he could pull that anger and that rage from people, but then he could switch that and he could immediately make you start laughing. So, you know, I think that is a huge piece to professional wrestling and to success within it, is being able to have those multifaceted layers and levels. And you know, it's not just, oh, these people are beating each other up. It's, you know, there's going to be times where they're sharing a beer, or they're putting on stupid hats, or somebody gets doused in milk, or somebody gets pushed into a mimosa pit. You know what I mean? Like,
it's always something fun happening.
Yeah. So, I think that's the beauty of professional wrestling. Like, I highly encourage anyone to look him up. I'm sure everybody has seen a meme about the guy anyway. There's a wrestler right now by the name of Orange Cassidy. He's in AEW, and his whole thing was he's so cool and aloof that he can't even like give a full thumbs up. He just kind of keeps his shades on and he gets kind of like a really half thumbs up, and he doesn't really say anything, keeps his hands in his pockets. but they're building him up to be, you know, to build that other persona now, and how he faces adversity and how he deals with people who push him to a limit where he can't just be aloof. Those are the things that make wrestling so much different than what people sometimes want to give that that stereotype to. And that's what really has always drawn me to it and will continue to draw me to it.
What advice do you have for your fellow nerds?
I think the biggest piece of advice that I would have is to never stop pursuing your passions and interests based on anyone else's opinion. It's really easy for social norms to want to rule out and tell you what's good or bad to enjoy, but that doesn't make it right and it doesn't make it true. So my son, he's 10, and he's really big into anime right now. I'm not a big anime fan, but I also recognize that it's a genre and it's a passion for people, because just like wrestling, they can identify with certain things in that. So, you know, I never tell him, you know, I never try to tear that down for him. It's the same thing with whatever passion that you may have, is continue to pursue it, even if other people may think you're ridiculous for it.
Excellent advice.
That's fantastic. I agree. All right, so we got one final question that we ask everybody else. Do you have any guilty pleasures?
Now, are we talking wrestling or just in general?
Yes.
Take it as you will.
Answer the question however you feel.
So, I have a huge... Well, it's not really a guilty pleasure anymore because people love him, but it looks like Mark Revelet. I absolutely love him.
Who's he?
So... He is he's a musician, but he performs everything on a loop station and he makes the music himself. But a lot of his songs are just absolutely ridiculous. Like, I mean, ridiculous. Like, he has a song called Let Me In, I'm Trying to Fuck.
All right.
But it sounds like it's really dirty, but it's more funny, you know? But I absolutely love him because he does not care what other people think of him. He'll do a live stream where he's putting all the music together. And he recently started selling out different shows across the U.S. And he even did a drive-in tour during the lockdowns where people would just, you know, sit in their car. Would go to drive-ins and perform. And, I mean, just... his passion and his ability to go, this is me, I don't care. You know, I absolutely love that. So he would be my guilty pleasure.
I love people who are unapologetically themselves.
Yes.
I agree.
I strive to be like that.
Yeah, that's something that I only recently, like in the last few years, have really kind of started to find is that. And, you know, when you feel like you stick out in the middle of a crowd, and you kind of do, it's really hard to feel comfortable in your own skin, especially when you don't feel like you like the things that most people do. But, you know, professionally, I'm starting to find my voice and my footing. Personally, I'm finding those things. And it's just all about being able to say, this is who I am, and I'm okay with it, and I'm not going to pretend to be anything that I'm not.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Do you have anything you want to promote or anyone you want to give a shout out to?
Well, first I will give a shout out to my fellow medallions. Whoop. Because, you know, I've probably never been the easiest person in all my nerddoms and all my things. So being able to constantly love me through my ups and my downs. I'll give a shout out to my wonderful girlfriend, Lindsay. She encourages me even when she hates the things that I may find enjoyment in. And my son, Micah, for already being proud of who he is and loving himself every step of the way and not being scared to say the things that he wants out of life. And then anyone in the Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky area, I help promote and throw events, and I encourage everyone to, you know, be safe, be, you know, wear your masks, practice social distance. But every Sunday at Jersey's right now in Newport through at least November, we're going to be having a weekly event on Sunday from 3 to 11 p.m. It's called Sundaze, S-U-N-D-A-Z-E. And it's all house music, just all about bringing good energy, finishing your week strong, enjoying yourself and the people around you, and being able to go home and be happy and be re-energized for the week to come.
Where does that take place?
That's at Jersey's. It's J-E-R-Z-E-E, apostrophe S.
Is that in Cincinnati?
Do they have a website and stuff?
I don't believe Sundaze does. Jersey's does that. And that's in Newport, Kentucky.
All right. Well, what I had heard was we are out of time. Thank you, Feed. Thank you, Stampede. This is Seed signing off. We'll see you next week.
Visit our website at wihhw.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, see guest links and information, and some fancy extras. Also, check us out on Facebook at What I Had Heard Was, and Instagram at What I Had Heard. And if you really want to get something off your chest, shoot us an email at whatihadheardwas@gmail.com.